Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show. Conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. If you'd like to call into the show, the phone number is 888-627-6008. Again, that's 888-627-6008. When you listen to this program and other alternative media, you often hear the terms and phrases deep state and globalist and globalism, new world order and world government. With the deep state, what in my opinion is being referred to is what's also been called the Washington, D.C. establishment and permanent political class. This is a group of largely left-wing, that is, socialist government bureaucrats and their allies in the mainstream media, our educational and social institutions as well, who are, to a greater or lesser extent, dedicated to the eventual establishment of a new world political order, that is, world government or globalism, to which the United States and other sovereign nations must be made subservient. These people, there are many people involved in all this who have done very well for themselves financially and have their careers and fortunes tied up in promoting it, and who are threatened by Donald Trump and other political figures and their supporters around the world who want to put their governments and people first. After decades of gaining control of and influence over political, government, educational, and social institutions, the political left has been pushing America and other nations more and more toward acceptance of the idea of this new world political and governmental order and of an eventual world government as something that is just and appropriate and even desirable, though many people are still largely asleep to what this would actually mean in terms of their own lives and the freedoms they have and take for granted, particularly in this country. On today's show, in order to give you a better perspective on what is going on today, I want to play sound bites from a number of episodes from a very interesting video series I came across called Behind the Deep State with host Alex Newman, produced by New American Magazine. The New American can be found on the internet at www.thenewamerican.com. To its credit, this series is available to anyone on YouTube, which is owned by Google, proof that left-wing censorship on this information Leviathan is not total, at least not for now. I've selected some episodes from this series that discuss the deep state itself, the annual World Government Summit held in United Arab Emirates and attended by government and private sector leaders from around the world, the power, influence, and nefarious activities of that ultimate globalist, American financier George Soros, and that quintessential world government advocate, the Council on Foreign Relations, or CFR. Let's start with a brief soundbite from one of these series called The Deep State Behind the Deep State to learn of some of the people involved. Please play soundbite one.
So there's the deep state that people recognize, and now the establishment media is talking about. You have the intelligence agencies that have been engaged in false flags and gun running and drug trafficking and torture and mind control experiments and all the rest of it. You have the bureaucracies that are, 98% anti-Trump. But then what's really important, I think, that people understand is the deep state behind the deep state. And here I talk about the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberg Group, Skull and Bones, the secret society at Yale that Bush and Kerry were both members of. We talk about the Bohemian Grove, where, as we mentioned, they come together and they burn a child effigy, what they say is a child effigy, in front of a 40-foot stone owl. And of course, the money men, right? We talk about George Soros and the Rothschilds, who actually helped finance George Soros. the Rockefellers. You have David Rockefeller admitting in his own autobiography that he's a conspirator conspiring against the best interests of his own country with a secret cabal for the purposes of creating a one world order. I mean, he admits this and he says he's proud of it. So at this point, they're out in the open now, and we have to understand what we're up against so that we can fight it.
Okay, now let's hear about this annual World Government Summit, which is held every year in the United Arab Emirates. Will you please play soundbite two?
Did you know that globalists from all over the world are getting together every year for a World Government Summit? If you're like most Americans, you probably had no idea. And that's because the media is not reporting it, even though the media is all there. So for 7 years now, the dictatorship ruling the United Arab Emirates has been inviting leading globalists, thousands of them from all over the world, to come join for this super creepy World Government Summit. So they get together once per year on the Arabian Peninsula and blabber about, as you might expect from the name, world government. And they are deadly serious. Not just globalists show up at these things. You also get communists who come from China, from other communist places. You get Islamists, right? It's basically everybody is invited except conservative Christian Americans. And it is a very, very strange confab. I mean, if you just listen to the public speeches they make, and there are lots of them, you know, they're openly pushing globalism. They're openly pushing this agenda for a world government. They're promoting technocracy. They want rule by experts and rule by themselves. And they really are plotting the future of what they themselves often refer to as the New World Order. You know, George H.W. Bush first described that really publicly, for the American public at least, back in 1991. He said it would be an order in which a credible United Nations would use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and the vision of the UN's founders.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founders.
And, of course, Bill Clinton agrees.
After 1989, President Bush kept said, and it's a phrase that I often use myself, that we needed a new world order.
Joe Biden agrees.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order.
At this World Government Summit, it seems like what they're doing is just figuring out how do we advance this new world order forward? How do we move the process along? And so what happens is you literally get like the entire leadership of the United Nations shows up at these things. You get the leadership of the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, from the European Union, Communist China, leading central bankers, even from the people from the Trump administration showed up in 2019. And they mingle with, totalitarians of different types, mass murderers, Islamic dictators, communist leaders, things like that. And really, a lot of Islamists come because it's in the Islamic world. In 2019, they had a surprise guest. Pope Francis showed up, and he had met with the leading Sunni Islam leader not too long before, and they agreed that they're worshiping the same God, and they're going to enter into the Ark of Fraternity together. A lot of Catholic theologians condemned that rhetoric. In fact, they said it sounded Masonic, which, of course, the Catholic Church has historically not allowed members to become members of the Freemasonic fraternity, but Pope Francis really came under a lot of fire for this, but shortly after he went to the World Government Summit, and you really didn't hear about this in the news again, but he said some things that were very interesting. He talked about, for example, offering the best wishes for the work of the attendees, a lot of Marxist-type rhetoric. He said, there's all these problems in the global village, and now we need cooperation and environmentalism to deal with these alleged problems. He said we needed to put, people in the environment ahead of capital and economic interests. So, very colorful language from the leader of the Catholic Church blessing this very, very bizarre summit. And
You know, it's especially bizarre when you think about what happened in 2017. You know, a lot of people don't realize that in 2017, you actually had the erection of an Arch of Baal at this thing. And this is pretty crazy stuff. And I recognize, you know, normal people think, what in the world? Well, Baal, of course, was a demonic idol referenced very often in the Bible, you know, associated with child sacrifice, associated with sexual debauchery, with pantheism, heathenism, worship of the creation rather than the creator. And so there was this giant arch in front of the Temple of Baal in a city called Palmyra in Syria, and they built a giant replica of it. And the first place they put it up was at the World Government Summit, right? Really weird stuff. It reminds me of the Bohemian Grove, where they get together in front of this giant 40-foot stone owl. You can see the episode we did on Behind the Deep State, where we talked about the Bohemian Grove. You can see a clip of that that radio host Alex Jones snuck in there and got. So very weird stuff, very occult things going on here. The people who show up at these things and the speeches they give are really quite remarkable. At the 2019 one, for example, you had Harrison Ford showed up. And I mean, the guy sounded like, I don't know, the leader of a doomsday cult or something. He's blabbering about how he is nature and you know, he pretended to be the ocean and speak for the ocean and the trees. And, you know, he said, oh, well, one time I covered the whole earth. And you know, I don't know if he was thinking he was talking about the time of Noah's flood or what other time, maybe, you know, before creation, before God made the dry land come out. I don't know what exactly he was thinking, but he was, you know, suggesting that basically humans are irrelevant. He used some profanities. I don't care if humans are here. You know, only Mother Earth matters. But very, very strange to see globalists and pantheists and occultists and Islamists all hobnobbing together. You had a senior official of the United Nations threatening there was going to be these horrible consequences for billions of people if we didn't submit to the UN agenda. And that was really the theme of the 2019 World Government Summit, was this Agenda 2030. We're going to be doing a whole episode on Agenda 2030 very soon, so stay tuned for that, a whole episode of Behind the Deep State. And and Agenda 2030, really the simplest way to understand it is just a roadmap to totalitarianism, right? Developed in partnership with the Communist Chinese government and all these globalists. Every government in the world signed on. Pope Francis loved it. I want to give you just a sense of who goes to these types of meetings. In the 2019 one, and this is very typical of what you've had every year, this is now an annual event, you had people like the head of the IMF, Christine Lagarde, who said, you know, the IMF should probably think about going to move to China, communist China, one of these days. You know, total globalist, been in trouble for different scandals, corruption, things like that. Then you had the head of the UN World Intellectual Property Organization, a guy called Francis Gurry, who's been involved in retaliating against whistleblowers, vote buying, sending dual-use technology to the regimes in North Korea and Iran, you know, stealing DNA from his subordinates to find out who wrote a letter about him that he wasn't pleased with. Like, really, really crazy stuff. You had the head of UNESCO, the UN's Global Education Department, right? The UN Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, socialist from France. And I mean, you know, people who read The New American regularly know what these people are up to. It's sick stuff, right? They're promoting global standards for sex education. They're promoting perversion. They want to teach five-year-olds about unspeakable things. Then you had the head of the UN Development Program, a guy called Achim Steiner, you know, total globalist, anti-human zealot. You had the head of UNICEF, the UN, one of the UN's children agencies that's been involved in, you know, distributing vaccines that have been sterilizing people. You had the head of the UN General Assembly, Maria Espinosa. You had the head of the World Food Program, David Beasley. You had this totalitarian weirdo, Jeffrey Sachs, the guy who helped bring about the Sustainable Development Goals, Agenda 2030. He's been advising pretty much every Marxist and radical that you can think of. He also advised Chinese communists, you know, totalitarian, as I mentioned. You had the head of the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, right? This self-proclaimed citizen of the world who brings together all these globalists in Davos, Switzerland every year. You had presidents, prime ministers, right? The president of Rwanda came and talked about how the African Union needed to usurp more power from the peoples of Africa. You had the prime minister of Pakistan demanding more wealth redistribution. You had even people from the Trump administration showed up. You actually had U.S. Energy Secretary Rick Perry, who has been to Bilderberg. He announced that there was going to be like some kind of robotics competition. You had the deputy administrator of FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. You had the former head of the EPA there, Lisa Jackson. involved in all sorts of scandals while bullying and trying to destroy private property throughout the Obama administration. And yet, you know, all of this going on, world leaders, American leaders, all these people coming together to celebrate globalism, and almost not a peep in the American media. You know, most Americans never heard of them, about any of this. Why is that? And, you know, what's really interesting about this is that it's not because the media didn't know about it. It's not because the media wasn't there. In fact, this event was actually sponsored by the New York Times, the Financial Times, CNBC, the ultimate in fake news, the CNN, right? The Clinton News Network or the Communist News Network, as our president calls them. You are very fake news, right? So CNN sponsored it, but of course they didn't talk much about it in America. Even Sky News sponsored it, which is owned by the same company that owns Fox News. You know, all of these fake media outlets are in bed together. They're all members of, you know, the Council on Foreign Relations. Their leaders go to Bilderberg. Their leaders go to World Government Summit and all these sorts of things. So really corrupt. And, you know, why are world leaders getting together under an Arch of Baal replica? Why are they getting together to talk about globalism? And why isn't the media talking about this stuff? This is what we mean when we talk about a deep state. These people like to hide in the shadows, right? Why would they want to hide in the shadows? Well, because what they're doing is evil. Right? If what they were doing was good, they would be proudly telling us about it. They would be trumpeting it. CNN would be playing it on endless loop. So what's going on here is very dark. You know, these people truly do intend to set up a world government. That's one of the key agendas of the deep state. And there's so much here to analyze. I wish we had more time. You know, why are Islamists and communists cooperating together? Why is the Pope involved in this? What is going on here? And why aren't they consulting the people of America if we're okay with all this? We're the ones paying for it all, right? We're the ones who are losing our sovereignty, losing our freedom. It's time to put a stop to all this. And one of the ways that you can help do that is expose all of this. So make sure you like this video, share it, comment below, and please help us get the word out. It's not okay to have all these globalists meeting together for their little world government summit and engaging in occult practices and blabbering about the need for globalism. It's just not okay, especially when we finance it with our tax dollars and it's being kept secret from us. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Alex Newman, your host here on Behind the Deep State. I hope you'll stay tuned. We'll be back with another episode next week. Go back and watch the episodes we did before. So much to talk about. Thanks again for tuning in. God bless you all, and signing out.
Again, the people involved in this don't want you to know much about it, except their puff piece public relations tidbits put out about it, because they don't want you knowledgeable about it or having any real say in it. Now let's hear about the, quote, doctor of evil, unquote, George Soros, whose billions are being used to finance all manner of left-wing and globalist causes in the U.S. and around the world. I really believe that he's only one of a even much larger amount of what they call dark money coming from Asians and corporations and other entities which are very well off, very well financed, who want to bring about this new world order. Will you play soundbite 3, please?
Good criminal investigators always know that the place to start any investigation is by following the money, right? It's almost a cliche. You got to follow the money. And so on this episode of Behind the Deep State, we are going to follow the money. And a lot of that money, it turns out, traces right back to this guy. I like to call him Dr. Evil. He likes to describe himself as a god, self-proclaimed atheist, but he likes to describe himself as a god. His name is George Soros. You probably know why I call him Dr. Evil, but I want to break this down. You know, who is Soros? And I think the first thing to know about him is that this guy has an ego the size of Jupiter. Here's an interesting quote. This came from an interview he did with The Independent back in 1993. He said, it's sort of a disease when you consider yourself some kind of god, the creator of everything, but I feel comfortable about it now since I began to live it out. So this is a guy who thinks of himself as a god, and it wasn't just a one-off comment back in 1987 in his book, The Alchemy of Finance, which in itself is a very weird title. He said, I fancied myself as some kind of god, right? So this guy has crazy messianic delusions. He also talks about, he sometimes feels like he's mad as in crazy. And I think that's probably a good assessment. I think psychiatrists call that psychopathy, where you have absolutely no feeling of empathy or guilt for the evil that you do. We'll come back to that in a moment. Another important thing to know about George Soros is that he got his start with funding from the Rothschild dynasty, the House of Rothschild. And we'll do another episode on the House of Rothschild in the coming weeks. But the Rothschilds are really like this massive banking family that has been kind of at the center of world politics and world finance for centuries now. And the Washington Times, there was a really interesting, very revealing story that appeared there. It was about George Soros and the House of Rothschild. And what they reported was that the Banque Privée, which means the private bank based in Switzerland, was actually one of the original funders of George Soros and his Quantum Fund. Actually, they put money in back in 1969. And then between 1970 and the year 2000, the return on that investment was about 3,500%, which is just all out of proportion to anything that makes sense. And you might say, well, he must have been a really good businessman. He must really understand financial markets. I don't think so, right? Like other very, very wealthy establishment people, they don't make their money through good business practices. They make their money through shady dealings. And you don't have to take my word for it. Actually, in 2002, George Soros was convicted of insider trading. Isn't that cute, right? So he was trading on insider knowledge. And yeah, you know, it's a lot easier to make a lot of money if you've got friends in high places and they tell you what's going to happen when and all that kind of good stuff. So Soros has made many billions of dollars. He's also been affiliated with a lot of the deep state institutions that we talk about regularly on this program. For example, he served as a director at the Council on Foreign Relations. His company is part of the quote-unquote President's Circle, you know, the big money corporate backers of the CFR. Of course, Soros has been at Bilderberg, and he's been involved in all these secretive, shadowy organizations. And in 2017, I want to go over some of the money stuff here, speaking of tracking the money. In 2017, we learned that Soros had dumped about $18 billion of his fortune into his tax-exempt open society foundations. Now, this was most likely to avoid the estate tax. You know, he knows his appointment with the Grim Reaper is coming eventually, like all of ours. And so he wanted to probably not have Uncle Sam take all that money. You know, he's fine with Uncle Sam taking all your money, but obviously he doesn't want his money to go to Uncle Sam. He knows how to spend it better than Uncle Sam, right? So he put all this money in there, and I guess his son, Alex Soros, will be helping to take the reins here. But this will allow him to have $18 billion to continue waging his war on God, a war on humanity, and his war on America. So let's go over some of the stuff that George Soros' money has funded over the years. Of course, we have Planned Parenthood, the largest murderer of unborn children in America, right? Hundreds of thousands of children every year are slaughtered by this organization. And then they go on and they sell the body parts, as we found out from the hidden cameras that were used. He funded Occupy Wall Street. He funded the Ferguson riots. He put $33 million into this Black Lives Matter organization that, of course, doesn't represent black people whatsoever. He poured money into efforts to nationalize our police forces. He put money into the Tides Foundation, which is kind of a pass-through big laundromat for money, right? The billionaires, they put their money into this organization. It all gets scrambled up and mixed up, and then they pass it out to all these Marxist groups, terrorist groups, communist groups, subversive organizations. He's funded gun control efforts with gazillions of dollars. He funded this women's march, right? I think he put many, many millions of dollars into the organizations that were behind this women's march. He's funded MoveOn.org, you know, the fake grassroots liberal advocacy group. He funded the racist group La Raza, right? In Spanish, that means the race, right? Very, very racist group. He funds the Center for American Progress, a far-left progressive astroturf group that loves to lie about conservatives, also has other big corporate backers. Funds the ACLU. He funds this whole more recent children's climate change advocacy, right? We found out that he and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation have created this organization called One, and then one of the people who works with this One organization is serving as the handler of Greta Thunberg, the poor little autistic Swedish girl who's being paraded around by world leaders as the symbol of climate activism. He's been putting a lot of his money into subverting churches. And this is true for Catholics, Protestants, and Orthodox. Doesn't matter. For example, he's given money to Catholics for Choice, right? An abortion group that wants the Catholic Church to start supporting the slaughter of unborn babies. Well, of course, if you know anything about Catholic doctrine or the Bible. Killing babies is strictly prohibited, whether they're born or unborn. Always has been, always will be. And so Catholics for choice is something of an oxymoron, right? I mean, you can't be a Catholic and support abortion. You can't support abortion and be a Catholic. It's just how it is. He's been funding training programs in Eastern Europe for Orthodox pastors. He actually managed to get some tax money involved in this effort, too. We'll talk about that. But we reported at the New American that he was funding these training programs for Orthodox pastors in Eastern Europe, even into Georgia, the nation of Georgia, where they were being trained to love globalism and promote globalism to their congregations. They were being trained to support homosexuality, which is, of course, clearly condemned in the scriptures, right? So this just gives you a sense of it. He also has been caught funding the Protestant churches. He put money into this thing called the Evangelical Immigration Roundtable, which has been exposed as basically an open borders group trying to infiltrate conservative Protestant denominations in the United States. Speaking of this mass migration, Soros has been very, very active in this as well. He talked about borders being the obstacle. His Open Societies Institutes funded the Sutherland Report, which laid out kind of the blueprint for this mass migration. And in a very bizarre turn of events, it turns out George Soros also is involved with the International Crisis Group. This is kind of an international astroturf group of deep state insiders that advocates endless war under the guise of humanitarianism. So this group wanted war in Libya. This group wanted war in Syria. This group helped mess up numerous countries in the Middle East and North Africa. They also helped bring to power some nasty Islamists in some of these nations. And so what happened? George Soros and his buddies destroyed a bunch of countries, and then George Soros and his buddies said, hey, we're going to roll out the red carpet and we're going to invite you into Europe or into the Western world. This would be like an arsonist burning down somebody's house and then inviting them to come into your house and live at your expense and pretending to be a humanitarian in the process, right? It's criminal. It's not humanitarian. It's crazy. And yet that's the kind of stuff that George Soros is involved in. We also have a leaked memo from Soros Foundation. This came out a few years ago where they were outlining this plan to co-opt Catholic officials so they could push Soros's pro-abortion fanaticism onto the Catholic Church. They were very proud of what they had done in Ireland. We know from leaked documents from the Soros organization that they were planning to build power, quote, to bring about what they called systemic change, right? Systemic change away from individual liberty, away from Christian civilization, and toward globalist totalitarianism. Soros also funds a bunch of media outlets and fake media outlets to promote the activists that he's funding, to promote the fake studies he funds at universities, to argue for his point of view. There are groups in over 100 countries that we know have received George Soros money. And he uses his lobbying power to supplement all this money that he's giving away with our tax money, right? In Uzbekistan, we found out that the U.S. State Department had given money directly to George Soros' groups so they could go and spend it in Uzbekistan. In Colombia, we found out that USAID, the U.S. Agency for International Development, was funding Soros projects to bring communist terrorists to power in Colombia. We know that in the EU and in Europe, he was funding, he was hijacking European Union tax funding to subvert our churches. We know that he has been involved in promoting the embracing of LGBT using tax money. The influence of this is really hard to overstate. It is enormous. To give you some sense of how huge this is, the Ford Foundation, one of the most powerful foundations in the world, these tax-exempt foundations, the president of this, his name is Darren Walker, he was quoted as saying in the media that there is no foundation in the world, including the Ford Foundation, that has had more of an impact around the world than the Open Society Foundations in the last two decades. Now, keep in mind, the Ford Foundation has been one of the most powerful tax-exempt foundations going back clear to the 1940s and 50s. Now, what kind of world does George Soros envision? Well, we know a lot about it, right? In 2009, he told the Financial Times, one of the big establishment newspapers, that communist China should own the New World Order in the same way that the United States owned the Old World Order. Keep in mind, the communist Chinese government is the most ruthless, most murderous dictatorship to have ever existed in human history. They murdered maybe 100 million people, right? And yet you have people like Soros and people like the Rockefellers constantly blabbering about how great this is. So in 2010, Soros was getting his Globalist of the Year award. True story, he was actually getting the Globalist of the Year award. And he said, while he was receiving this award, that China, this is a quote, China has not only a more vigorous economy, but actually a better functioning government than the United States. And, you know, I guess if you consider mass murder, torture, the internment of over a million Muslims in re-education camps, the persecution of Christians, enforced abortions, I mean, if you consider those things good government, then yeah, I mean, China's doing a fantastic job. But this really reveals, I think, some of the mindset that George Soros has. Now, my colleague, William Jasper, did a phenomenal cover story in The New American. It was called George Soros, the God Who Should Be Jailed, obviously the false God who should be jailed, where he showed some of these crimes that Soros has committed, some of the, you know, funding riots, all these different statutes that he's violated. It is really time for serious investigations at the state level, at the federal level, of these tax-exempt foundations where the deep state hides all its money in tax-exempt entities. We really need to get to the bottom of all this. It's completely inappropriate to have these revolutionaries waging war on America, waging war on humanity, waging war on everything that is good, hiding their money in these tax-sheltered accounts while they fly around the world in private jets and yachts and all the rest of it. This has got to stop. It's time for real investigations. We need another committee to investigate these tax-exempt foundations.
Recently, George Soros has come out saying that China is a great enemy of the U.S., I guess, in the West. I'm not sure whether he's engaging in doublespeak to throw people off what he's done in the past, but a lot of interesting stuff here. Now, finally, let's hear some information on the Council on Foreign Relations. Play soundbite four, please.
Welcome to another episode of Behind the Deep State, and today we have a special program for you. We're going to be talking about one of the key organizations in the constellation of organizations that make up the deep state behind the deep state. Actually, in our special report on the deep state, one of our articles is about some of the kind of semi-secret organizations that really call the shots. And, you know, all these bureaucrats, all these people who run the intelligence agencies, they all kind of network through these organizations. And today we want to focus in particular on the Council on Foreign Relations. We know a lot about the CFR, as I'll call it for short. One of the key sources of information on the significance of the CFR to not just the deep state in the United States, but the international deep state, you know, the real deep state pushing for this new world order. A lot of the evidence comes from a book by Georgetown University professor Carol Quigley, who was actually a mentor to Bill Clinton, one of the few people that Bill Clinton thanked when he became president. He was very close to the deep state for many years, and in fact, he said publicly that he agreed with their agenda. One of the things he did disagree with was the secrecy, but he was given an opportunity to examine their records for a period of several years. And in 1966, he actually spilled the beans, so to speak, in a book called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. Much of the book is rather boring, but it is an incredibly important book where he kind of outlines the goal of these people, a global neo-feudalist system with themselves in charge and us, of course, as the serfs. And one of the things he says in this book, he says, there does exist and has existed for a generation an international Anglophile network which operates to some extent in the way the radical right, which would be you, believes the communists act. He said, in fact, this network, which we may identify as the Round Table Groups, has no aversion to cooperating with the communists or any other groups, and frequently does so. Surprise, right? Here you thought the super capitalists were mortal enemies of the communists. And the lead roundtable group that he identifies in the United States is the Council on Foreign Relations. So we need to take a close look at this organization and see what it's all about, what the agenda is, what its members say, what its publications say, and we're going to do that. So to start with, we'll point out that this group was created in 1921 after the League of Nations failed to get through the Senate. Basically, the globalists were furious that our Senate would not agree to surrender some of our sovereignty to this proto-global government. The group has less than 5,000 members at any given time. Of course, these are many of the most prominent people in American society, though, in business, in politics, in media, in banking, and so on. And to get a sense of just how influential this group is, let's listen briefly to Hillary Clinton while she was serving as Secretary of State.
Thank you very much, Richard. And I am delighted to be here in these new headquarters. I have been often to, I guess, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
So there you heard it, straight from the horse's mouth. No insult intended to horses, but you know, she made very clear that she gets her orders from the Council on Foreign Relations. They tell her how she should think about the future. It's pretty amazing, right? But certainly that's only the Democrats, right, who hate America and want to, you know, kill babies with abortions and want to surrender our sovereignty and open up the borders. Actually, no. Here's Darth Vader.
It's good to be back at the Council on Foreign Relations. As Pete mentioned, I've been a member for a long time and was actually a director for some period of time. I never mentioned that when I was campaigning for re-election back home in Wyoming.
Just kidding. It wasn't Darth Vader, right? That was Dick Cheney, the vice president under Republican President George W. Bush. So they're all part of the club, and then they laugh that they don't tell you about it on the campaign trail, right? I don't tell the folks back home in Wyoming when I'm running for re-election. And why would he, right? Why should the silly voters know that he's hobnobbing with people like Hillary Clinton behind the scenes to surrender our sovereignty? Just to give you a sample, you know, again, they have almost 5,000 members at any given time. And fortunately, they have a website where you can find out to all their members. But just to give you some sense, Roger Ailes of Fox News, Jimmy Carter, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Bill Clinton, Newt Gingrich, Mikhail Gorbachev, Henry Kissinger, members of the cabinet, right? Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter. The cabinets are always dominated by CFR members until Trump came along. He still got a few in there. CEOs, right? Some of the corporate members, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase, American Express, Citigroup, Credit Suisse, Deutsche Bank, Soros Fund Management, Bank of New York Mellon Corporation, Canadian Imperial Bank, Crédit Agricole, Rothschild North America, you know, from the military industrial complex, DynCorp, Booz Allen Hamilton, Raytheon, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, all the big oil companies, right? ExxonMobil, Shell, Chevron, BP, Hess. And the media, right? News Corporation, which owns Fox News and the Wall Street Journal, corporate member of the CFR. Also, National Geographic, Time Warner, which owns the Communist News, the Clinton, what do you call it? The CNN, right? HBO, The Economist, Bloomberg, right? All of these are members of the CFR. And you wonder why you get the same kind of garbage no matter what channel you flip to. It's because they're all members of the same deep state groups. We know a lot about their agenda, too. Right? I mean, for one thing, by their fruits, you shall know them. And we can kind of see the fruits, right? More war, more subversion, bigger government, more debt, less liberty. So we can see that. But we also have had whistleblowers. U.S. Admiral Chester Ward, he was a member of the CFR for more than 15 years, and then he defected and blew the whistle. He said a lot of stuff. He actually wrote a book, Kissinger on the Couch. I highly recommend you get a copy. He said the main purpose of the Council on Foreign Relations is promoting the disarmament of U.S. sovereignty and national independence. He said the goal is submergence of the United States into an all-powerful one-world government. This lust to surrender the sovereignty and independence of the United States is pervasive throughout most of the membership. And this is especially relevant in the Trump era. You know, he made his campaign slogan, America First. Well, Admiral Chester Ward says that in the entire CFR lexicon, there is no term of revulsion carrying a meaning so deep as America First. And obviously that would explain why so much of the fake media, so many of the fake Republicans, so many of the Democrats despise Trump, right? He said, we're going to put America first. We're not going to have all these illegal wars. We're not going to surrender our sovereignty for globalism. And so, you know, you start to get a sense of why they hate him so much. The CFR has admitted all this itself. You know, one of the key people involved in the CFR for decades, actually for generations, was David Rockefeller, the late David Rockefeller. And he confessed in his own book on page 405, his memoirs, he said that he's proud of being a conspirator with a secret cabal against the best interests of the United States, working to create a one-world economic and political order. I mean, this is what he says in his own book, right? It's not a theory, and it's not even a conspiracy if they're bragging about it in their books, right? I mean, they don't tell you about it in the fake media, but that's what they say. The CFR also has a little magazine. It's called Foreign Affairs. Admiral Chester Ward explained that if you want to know what the policy of the U.S. government is going to be years in advance, just read their magazine, Foreign Affairs, and they'll tell you. Right? And what you see is remarkably, that becomes the policy of the United States government. That may be changing under the Trump administration, but we'll have to see. But in 1974, Deputy Assistant Secretary of State Richard Gardner wrote an article, and he wrote, quote, "In short, the House of World Order will have to be built from the bottom up rather than from the top down. An end run around national sovereignty, eroding it piece by piece, will accomplish much more than the old-fashioned frontal assault." So there you have it, right? These people are proud of the fact that they are eroding your national sovereignty. And think about what that means, right? If we lose our national sovereignty, we lose our Constitution. We lose our Declaration of Independence. We lose our right to govern ourselves. We lose our God-given rights that are protected by our Constitution, our right to speak freely, our right to worship God and to religious liberty. Our right to petition the government for redress of grievances, our right to keep and bear arms, our right to a trial by jury. All of that is on the line with these globalists and their agenda. So we need to expose them, right? Evil hates the sunlight, right? So you got to shine the light on these people, expose them, tell other people about them. And we need to oppose them. We need to oppose their agenda. We need to protect U.S. sovereignty. We need to protect our liberties and our Constitution. And we need to protect our independence from all these institutions that the CFR has helped to create, like the UN and the International Monetary Fund and all the rest of these globalist organizations that want to subvert our freedoms and our country. Being a member of the CFR should be the kiss of death in politics. It should be as politically toxic as saying that you're a Nazi or a communist or a racist, right? When someone is a member of the CFR, that should automatically disqualify them for consideration in the minds of voters for office, whether that be Congress or governor or state legislature or the presidency of the United States. It is unacceptable.
The New American, which produces this series, is obviously a group of conservative Christians. I was raised as a Christian, and although I'm not a deeply religious Christian in the Orthodox sense, I find that I have and have found over the years that I have a great deal more in common with conservative Christians than I do with the godless communists and other religion-hating people on the political left. While I wouldn't want to be burned at the stake in a theocracy for some kind of heresy, that has not happened in our country as America, when the way it was founded. You are free to worship as you please or not worship at all, which is fine. That's what freedom is all about. The people who are pushing all of this world government stuff want to force you to accept the values that they are promoting secretly in many cases. You may not agree with everything being said in this series by the New American about these people in the deep state and its affiliates and their activities and philosophies. That's your right under our current political system. But it's also your right to inquire and become more knowledgeable about all this. And we had all better do that before it's too late. You will not be seeing this kind of material on CBS or CNN or the New York Times, which are all part of this thing. Since these people are advocating one way or another the overthrow of our system of government and the freedoms we take for granted, what's at stake is not only the future of America, but of Western civilization. Now, I'd like to have you hear more about what it was like when one of these world government organizations, Communist China, took over after their successful communist revolution and take over there in the late 1940s and early 1950s. We ran out of time last week, so I asked our guest on last week's show, Cato, come back to tell us more about what happened to his mother and grandmother during the communist takeover in southern China. Cato, are you with us?
Yes, James. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks so much for returning to my show. Last week, you spoke briefly about the circumstances of the communist takeover in China and how your grandmother was forced to give up all her money and valuables, including her home, to the communists because she was considered one of the evil oppressors there. Please give us a recap of your talk last week and then continue with what happened with your grandmother and mother.
Yes, James. Last week, I told you and your audience how the Chinese communists took over my grandmother's house by assigning two so-called proletariat families to live with my grandmother, and they confined my grandmother and her three children, including my mother, into one room, and then the other two proletariat families occupied the rest of the house. At that time, my grandfather was in the Philippines. He was having a pretty successful import-export business in Manila. And had he stayed in China, I'm pretty sure he would have been killed. But the fact that he was in the Philippines actually saved my grandmother's life, because the communists, the local underground communists, knew that my grandfather regularly sent money to my grandmother in U.S. dollars. And they knew if they kept my grandmother alive and under their control, they could have a constant stream of foreign currency, especially U.S. dollars, which they very much wanted at that time. So they put my grandmother through a program in Mandarin Chinese called Lao Gai. It means reform through hard labor. So my grandmother was grouped into a team of women with similar caste background. The Chinese communists put people in different categories according to what they consider class. So the top of the society, the upper class, would belong to the proletariat, people who own nothing. And the second class is the peasants and the workers. And the third class are the, for example, teachers, so-called intellectuals. And the lowest of the lowest class belong to merchant, businessmen, or the bourgeoisie. So my grandmother and other women have to perform hard labor so that they can experience firsthand the hardship of the proletariat before the communist liberation. And one of her duties was to be sent to the bank of the river whenever there is a mass execution. The people being executed were so-called anti-revolutionaries. Once they were put before the firing squad, the bodies were dumped on the bank of the river to be exposed for 3 days, which in traditional Chinese practice is the ultimate insult or humiliation to the person. So as you can imagine, in South China, which has a climate similar to Florida in the U.S., a dead body exposed in the open for 3 days, decomposing, is in pretty bad shape. And my grandmother had to physically handle these dead bodies for burial. How long she did it, she never told me. She did tell me that eventually she contracted some kind of lung disease that almost killed her. But she did survive the ordeal and eventually make it to Hong Kong. But she never told me the details. And why I'm recalling this difficult episode in my family history is, like I said last time, to hopefully let the American people know that a socialist revolution led by communists has terrible consequences in terms of human lives and human liberty. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little emotional and I lost my English command of the English language. I'm sorry, James. And that's all I have to say today, James.
Well, your message is very powerful, and thank you so much, Cato, for coming back and sharing your family's experiences with us. I believe your story is a warning about what could happen here in America and elsewhere, should the globalists get their wish to abolish our Constitution and take us over, where we would have no rights, and where these people seem to have very little concern for human life, although they talk a good game to the opposite. They want to take us over for the supposed betterment of humanity, just as the communist Chinese said they were, and just as others have promised that down through the centuries. So thank you so very much again. I greatly appreciate your coming back. Well, that's it for another show. As always, I hope you found it of interest. We'll be back 2 weeks from today in this same time slot. Have a good evening.